Welcome to Vox Talks, a new series of audio interviews from Vox, a website launched in June 2007 to provide research-based policy analysis and commentary from leading economists. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Michael Woodford, who is John Bates Clark Professor of Political Economy at Columbia University. Michael and I spoke at the American Economic Association meetings in New Orleans in January of this year, and we talked about the communication policies of central banks. I began by asking him why these have become such an important feature of monetary policy making in recent years.
Well, I think that central banks around the world have come to realize that their communications policy is a very important part of their policy decisions. In the past, in the fairly recent past, this was not nearly the case. Central banks tended to view themselves simply as large players whose actions in markets had important effects because they occupied a crucial monopoly role over the supply of liquidity. And they tended even to think that preserving a sort of mystique, a mystery about what they were actually doing in markets would increase their power. And this view has changed very much, I think, at most central banks over the past 20 years, that central banks have realized that, in fact, the effects of policy depend very largely on perceptions, specifically on perceptions of what the future course of policy is likely to be. That it's not being able to affect the current level of overnight interest rates that matters very much for decisions in the economy, but expectations about the future path of overnight interest rates, which then affect longer-term interest rates, affect other asset prices, affect the exchange rate, and then those prices, in turn, affect many other economic decisions. And so it's the ability to steer these expectations about the future path of overnight interest rates that really matters for the effectiveness of monetary policy. Once one understands that, one realizes that the way one's actions are perceived and one's intentions are perceived is in fact a critical aspect of monetary policy. And as a result of this, central banks give much more attention now to the way they talk about policy and the kind of signals that they explicitly give about the decisions they've made and about the likely nature of future policy. One indication of this is that in recent years, the Federal Reserve's statement that it releases after it makes an interest rate decision has often been the subject of extensive focus in the financial press, where it's not so much the actual announcement of the interest rate decision that gets the most press or that there's the most speculation about in advance of the meeting, so much as other aspects of the communication. People are watching closely certain words in that statement for what they might signal about the likely future path of policy. And this is where the news is perceived to be. Not only that, but inside the Fed, what I'm told is that in the deliberations leading up to the decision and the press statement, that more time is spent by the members of the Federal Open Market Committee in discussing aspects of the wording of the statement that they're going to release and what that will or will not be taken to signal. More attention goes into that than actually discussing what size of interest rate change to announce, because this is perceived as a very critical aspect of policy and one that gets a lot of attention now inside the central bank.
How has this role of communication evolved over the last 20, 30 years, say in the Fed particularly, looking from the Volcker era through the Greenspan era and now into the Bernanke era?
Well, I think there's been an evolution through several steps, but the general trend is pretty consistently in one direction, which is toward more communication. In the Volcker period, it was still the case that the Fed said almost nothing about what it was doing. It did not admit openly, for example, to having an interest rate target, nor did it announce anything about what kind of decisions were made when the FOMC would meet. These would be the subject of speculation in the financial press. People would, so-called Fed watchers, would be specialists at trying to discern what the Fed had evidently decided to do, what its target for the federal funds rate must be. But nothing was officially admitted. Since 1994, under Greenspan, the Fed Fed instead moved to a position of openly announcing its federal funds rate operating target. Each time it makes such a decision, there's immediately a press statement. But since then, there have been movement toward even more open communications about other matters, and in particular, over the last 5 years, there's been a lot more direct attempts to signal the likely nature of future policy. And the occasion that was the biggest change in this aspect of Fed policy came in the summer of 2003, when the U.S. economy was in a situation where it was coming out of a recession. There had been a prolonged period of weakness in the economy. Inflation was very low. There was a lot of concern about the possible risk of sliding into actual deflation, like the kind that Japan was suffering and had not succeeded in climbing out of. The federal funds rate operating target had been cut to only 1% by the summer of 2003. There was not much willingness to cut it further. It wouldn't even be possible to cut it more than 1% further, but there was nervousness about what might even be the consequences of cutting it below 1%. And so the FOMC found itself in a position where they were not sure that further monetary stimulus wasn't needed. There was not going to be much room to do it through further cuts in the federal funds rate. And furthermore, then what started happening that summer was that long-term bond rates started shooting up, therefore effectively tightening monetary conditions, not because the Fed wanted it. And what I think they correctly perceived was going on was that people in the financial markets were speculating that the funds rate was very low. It couldn't go lower. It could go higher. And so the only thing to place bets on was, well, how quickly, how much, and how fast was it going to be raised to a more normal level? And people were saying, well, you know, recovery is perhaps coming, and so they were starting to already speculate that, well, by the fall, the Fed is going to be raising interest rates fast, and so long-term bond rates were already going up, and the FOMC was very concerned with this. They didn't like what was happening. They were afraid that these higher long-term bond rates were going to cause the incipient recovery to stall, that the U.S. economy could be tipped into deflation. And so they were concerned to head off those expectations, and the way they were able to do it was not to convince people they weren't going to raise rates by further cuts, which would have been the old method. You usually tried to signal future policy by doing something dramatic with the current level of interest rates. Here they couldn't do that, so instead they began talking more explicitly after meetings of the FOMC about their commitment to maintain policy accommodation. And starting in August of 2003, they met. They didn't change the funds rate operating target, but they issued a statement announcing that policy accommodation would be maintained for a considerable period. So what they were trying to do was to signal that it's not true, that you should be thinking it's at all likely that interest rates will be rising anytime soon. They weren't going to be falling either, and so basically they were saying they would stay where they were. You could be pretty sure of that, at least for the next several meetings, which was in fact the case. And so they began with each meeting issuing again this statement with the language about the considerable period. After that, they began, when it became time to eventually raise interest rates again, they furthermore signaled the nature of that. They began talking about the fact that it would now be time to raise interest rates soon, a couple of meetings before they actually started raising them. When they were about to start raising them, they started announcing that policy accommodation would be removed at a measured pace, which people soon learned meant 25 basis points per meeting, and there was a whole series of meetings at which every meeting 25 basis points increase, always again the statement saying we still believe that it's appropriate to remove accommodation at a measured pace, which signaled that they didn't regard interest rates as yet having reached their normal level, but there was also no belief that it was necessary to raise them at a faster rate, and so you could expect continuing 25 basis points per meeting increases. So there was a fairly clear anticipation about the future path of interest rates at least some months into the future. And their experience with this period, I think, was that they found that policy became much more predictable and financial markets were quite stable during that period. And I think that was something that showed them that talking more about the likely nature of future policy was something that had value from the point of view of stabilizing the economy, both maintaining calm in financial markets and keeping interest rates, including longer-term interest rates, more at the level that was desired. The question is what kind of things they can do to talk about future policy under more normal circumstances. So in the special circumstances that they faced in the summer of 2003, what they needed to say was fairly simple. The interest rate isn't going to go anywhere. In quite high probability it's not going to move at all because they'd be very reluctant to cut it, but they don't at all think it's a circumstance where they should be letting anyone think they would raise it. Once it was time to undo that, it was also fairly clear that interest rates had to rise by several percentage points. They didn't think it was desirable to raise them quickly. In particular, they wanted expectations not to be panicking by sudden moves. So given that, they could also say fairly clearly what was going to be happening for a while. Under more normal circumstances, that's not going to be the case, that you're going to want to directly say where the funds rate will be for the next several meetings in advance. And in particular, the situation of the last few months has been one where it would be highly undesirable to do that because market conditions have been changing very rapidly. And the question of whether you should wait until the next regularly scheduled meeting to do anything has been frequently raised at the press. Certainly the idea that you would want to have already announced yourself several meetings in advance where the funds rate would be, as opposed to being free to respond to the news, you know, as things are changing, would be a dangerous policy. But the Fed continues to be interested in improving the ways that it can talk to people about the likely future path of policy and try to shape expectations. And the new development this year that they're trying to pursue is to talk more about their internal forecasts and the internal forecasts that go into the policy decisions as a substitute for directly talking about likely future policy decisions. They're at least talking about what they, the FOMC members, view as the likely future evolution of several key macro variables, both several real variables and a couple of different measures of inflation, and in that way hoping to stabilize expectations about inflation and expectations about the real economy, as well as giving people an idea of what the Fed's own outlook for future policy is, insofar as you might be able to infer that from what it's saying about its forecasts of the evolution of the economy.
Michael, do you see significant differences in the communications policy of the major central banks? I mean, are there big differences between the Fed and the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, and the Bank of England, say? Or are there some differences,
well,
but they don't
are.
Really matter?
I mean, I think the most dramatic difference would be between the central banks that the Bank of England would be a good example of, that I would call forecast-targeting central banks, and the other leading central banks that you mentioned that that don't use this system. Forecast-targeting, as used, say, at the Bank of England, is something that was developed at several central banks, the Bank of England and Swedish Riksbank, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, would be some of the leading examples, developed this in the early 1990s when they adopted inflation targeting. And this is a system where the central bank not only focuses its policy decision on its projections for certain key economic variables and tries to make the decision that will lead to projections that satisfy a certain criterion, but also then explains policy to the public by talking about those projections and how finding projections that satisfied a certain target criterion did provide the justification for policy. So the Bank of England has been doing this now for more than a decade, publishing four times a year an inflation report that emphasizes the most recent version of these projections, their projection for CPI inflation and also for GDP growth in particular as key projections that they emphasize. They show the projections for those variables under a particular assumption about the forward path of policy that they discuss. And then if the projections are seen to satisfy the desirable criteria, in particular involves CPI inflation converging to the target of 2.0% 2 to 3 years in the future, then it's judged that that view of the forward path of policy is in fact a suitable one and that the current policy decision should be the one that was being assumed. in the projections. And so this is a way of both focusing the policy discussion, but also a key element of that kind of central bank's strategy for communicating with the public. And it communicates not only about the future outlook for the economy, but about the way policy is made, because there's a commitment to always explain policy within this same framework, so that when you see how it works, you see issue after issue, what kind of considerations go into those projections, how those projections are being used to justify the policy decision. Once you understand that, that means people in the markets can make a lot of judgments about how policy should also be conducted in the future under various circumstances that might arise. And so this, I think, helps a lot to give people in the private sector a clearer view of what they should expect about future policy. So this is quite different from the communication strategies of the Fed or the Bank of Japan or the ECB, none of which give nearly this same prominence to the role of their internal projections in the decision procedure. And I think this both means that they have a less structured decision procedure and that they talk less about what their decision procedure is. The recent move by the Fed is interesting because in some respects I think it represents an attempt to move in the direction of this kind of communication strategy that banks like the Bank of England have already been using. So they are going to publish these projections now four times a year, which is more often than they were doing in the past. They're going to extend them further into the future. They now go 3 years in the future, which is now more similar to, say, the communication strategy of the Bank of England. And they also include additional variables. Most critically, the projections that they release now include projections for headline PCE inflation, not just core inflation, but a broader inflation measure. Which again is consistent with the kind of projection that gets the most emphasis, say, by the Bank of England, which is a broader consumer price index inflation measure as the critical thing that observing what kind of projections for that variable the Bank of England is looking at is critical to understanding how policy is consistent with its inflation target. And I think including the projections for this broader PCE inflation by the Fed is a way of suggesting to people, at least, that the Fed has something like an implicit inflation target and what that target might be. In fact, governors of the Fed have suggested in their speeches that one ought to be able to infer from looking at these projections and looking at where they're converging to out 3 years in the future, one ought to be able to have a good idea of what the implicit inflation targets of the FOMC members are, although officially they're
Well, I'm on my way to the church.
Officially, the projections are just projections of how the economy would evolve under appropriate monetary policy.
All of this emphasis on communication suggests the need for communication skills within central banks as well as the technical economic skills. And I guess there's some implications for education of the media, which are the conduit for communicating with the public and the way these central banks are trying to do.
Well, I think that's right. I think that that thinking about communication has clearly become a much more important part of what people in the central banks do, which means they need people that are more skilled in thinking about that. But it's also right that the audience is a very important part of whether communication occurs or not, and people like the media, I think, play a particularly crucial role in that. I think that that's right.
Michael Wood, thank you very much.